Good afternoon. Welcome to Who's Tom and Dick? With your hosts, Martin Weavers and Patrick Mortimer.
Good afternoon, Patrick.
How you doing, Mark? All right?
Yeah. Looking forward to today's show again. We've got the exciting things today, but I still can't get over last week.
No, it was really good, wasn't it?
Oh, I never knew you could have so much fun out of a list.
And did you did you have any of those side effects by any chance? Apart from the obvious ones?
I made sure I stood properly going to the toilet.
I was going to say, are you still peeing funnily?
Not anymore.
It's been a long time, Martin, hasn't it, since we've actually had a guest on?
I know.
And now they're lining up.
I know. We've got a few lined up, and we did have a few who had to cancel, unfortunately, but they've only postponed, so they mm-hmm. haven't actually cancelled. They will be on at a later date, but that's what happens when people go to work and they have to do other things, doesn't it?
So yeah, unlike you.
But and you. That's why we do this. Wednesday afternoons and Friday. Well, not Wednesday afternoons, it's Friday afternoons.
Yes, of course.
We do other things Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah.
Our club, don't we?
Yeah.
What's it called? The Sport and Memories Club.
That's it.
Stadium. Right. Well, I'm going to introduce who we've got in the studio here with us today because we've got the lovely Louise Steggles with us. Hello, Louise.
Hi. Good afternoon, Louise.
Good afternoon, yes.
Hello.
I tell you what, she's been a busy lady. She's been a cancer nurse.
Right.
And she looked after her mum and dad, sadly, when they went through their cancer and lost their lives. And she's also started up her own dementia group. But she's going to tell us all about this. And in a minute, but mm-hmm. you now work in my local doctors, don't you?
So. I do indeed, yes.
Yes.
As a GPA.
A GPA.
Yes. And,
now, we tell people initials on this podcast, but we never know what they are sometimes. So what is a GPA?
So a GPA is a general practice assistant.
Ah.
So I do HCA work plus help with all the admin that the doctors need. So
right.
I don't do medication, but no. I can take your bloods.
Do you know
I
what?
I can do your ECGs.
I know you can take my blood.
I've done it many times. Oh, and Linda as well.
Yeah, but she told me you could take my blood.
Yeah.
We mentioned HGA. What was HGA stand for?
HCA.
Lorry, isn't
it? HCA is
HGV.
Health. Oh, right. Yeah.
HCA is healthcare assistant. So I'm slightly
assistant.
Higher than a healthcare assistant. So
HGA,
I can do
healthcare.
Yeah.
HCA.
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was HGA.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
you know RISN.
That's because I've got a pounding in my ears. That's a side effect from one of the tablets.
Yes.
Yeah, so I do all like your hypertension reviews, your diabetic reviews. I can do wound care. I can do all sorts of stuff like that. So,
wow. So yeah. If we have a sudden accident, we're all right here this afternoon.
Oh, yeah, you're fine. Quite you're in good hands.
Because I know you listen sometimes, and we've been talking about the CPR and all things like that. And in fact, you did a morning. We need to talk about that, don't we?
At some stage, yeah.
Yeah, at some stage.
Training people how to use a defibrillator.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
But yeah. We diversify.
No. We're yeah. here to talk to you today.
Exactly.
And anyway, you've also had breast cancer.
I have.
And you're going to... Where do you want to start back how you first got into... Because you was a cancer nurse. Was that first?
No. So I was a dementia nurse first. Mm-hmm. So my nan passed away and she always said that I would make a fantastic nurse. Never thought at all that I was even brainy enough to do it. So my nan passed away and I nursed her in the last sort of months of her dementia, just basically being there and making sure she was... You know, looked after well. And
how old were you at the time?
35, 36.
Okay. Yeah. Also, you'd had other jobs then.
Oh, yeah. I was worked in retail. So yeah. Mum at a young age worked in retail. So, my nan always said, you've got a caring side about it. You should pursue it.
Yeah.
Never thought I could. Went into nursing after my nan passed away. Thought, no, I'm going to definitely do it. Because I found it really lovely to look after a sort of loved one at the last stages of their life. I thought it was really humbling. So I went through all the training and I worked in a rehab/dementia ward called Elm Court. Was there for about 3 years. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
Had some amazing...
Is that local then?
No, this is back in London. So Dartford, Kent. So Darent Valley.
Yeah. So some people might know who listen. But,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So just spent a lot of time with the dementias. Learned a lot about dementia. A lot of what the families expect. And that sometimes it's not just about the patient. It's about the families that need the care more than the patient. The patient actually doesn't know what's going on with them. It's the carers or the family that are sort of grieving a patient that's still alive but dying slowly because they're every day something's going wrong or they're getting their memories are fading. And so I found that really interesting. But I decided I wanted to pursue it and learn more skills. So mm-hmm. off I went to work on a chemotherapy ward. So I was there and I worked there and I did PICC lines and Hickman lines and wig measurements and looking after ladies who had lost all their hair, looking after ladies, making them sort of mentally strong, making sure with bowel cancers, you know, like naming the stoma. I thought that was really funny. You know, just doing things like that to make it so it wasn't such a huge,
yeah,
horrendous deal. Mm-hmm. Just making it a bit of fun, bringing a bit of fun into it. So that's what I did. And then, unfortunately, my mum got sick.
Mm. Our first guest had a stoma bag, didn't he? Andy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He named his Donald.
Yes.
After Donald Trump.
Yeah. As in full of...
Yeah.
Yes.
And
one of the, was after dark.
One of the things he said, which was... Yeah. No, I asked him that, actually. One of the things that he said was quite common amongst stoma patients was popping peas.
Yes. See, now I... So I had a patient who actually painted a dartboard on her bathroom floor so that she... Because peas and sweet corn, you can't... Oh, we don't digest them. So right. they can actually block a stoma.
Right.
So... She painted a sort of target dartboard on her bathroom floor and tried to pop it out of her stoma and right. just get a score point just for a laugh.
Yeah,
because she was like, I've got to make it funny.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
actually it's quite depressing and actually it's crap. Sorry, yeah. can I say that?
Yeah,
she did things like that, which I thought was just brilliant. I love things like that. So, yeah.
No, right. we like things that people make like light-hearted, don't we?
But
we
so, that's
what yeah. we do here.
Yeah.
But we don't laugh... At people.
No.
But the strange thing is, you know, when you have an illness, regardless of what it is, it's strange to find that people with that illness have common things.
Yes. Mm.
Popping peas.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's 60 miles away, but that yeah. rings a bell.
Yeah,
know,
absolutely.
With people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you knew straight away, didn't you?
Yeah, so yeah. Just straight away.
So anyway...
I didn't have a clue. Oh, well, do you know what? What's he talking about?
Yeah.
I thought it was his pills acting.
No, peas, not pills.
I was quite the queen of stoma bags because my slight OCD makes it... I love making people clean, so I'd be...
Yeah.
I mean, it's a gross job, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But I was like, yes, let's get you off. Let's get you all clean. Let's put all that powder on. Nice, clean stoma and off you go. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, very
nothing,
strange.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
But no. Anyway, where were you on your little story?
So unfortunately, 2017, I lost my mum to cancer mm-hmm. in a very, very short amount of time,
mm-hmm.
12 weeks from start to finish.
Wow, what cancer was it?
So she had bile duct cancer.
Right.
So we went round to her house one day and she looked bright yellow, and when I like a Simpson yellow.
Yeah.
So I was very much like, Mum, you're not very well, you need to go to the hospital. She was like, no, it's the sun. And anyway, I took her to urgent care, who basically took one look at her and just said, she's too ill to be here. You need to get her up to A&E. So we took her up to A&E. And of course, this is the A&E that I worked in. So I did bank shifts in A&E.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically just said they think there was a blockage in her bile duct. And that's why she was turned yellow. And that we're going to go down with a endoscopy and then blast it away.
Yeah.
And then hopefully the bilirubin will clear and she'll go back to a normal colour. So we took her in on the Monday, and on the Wednesday we were told, I'm really sorry, she's riddled with cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. So
showed no signs?
No signs at all. She wasn't in any pain. It literally was just, I'm really sorry, there isn't much we can do.
Mm.
In that space of time, she had a stroke, which basically meant all her treatment, just what they were planning on doing, just came to a grinding halt because there was no way they would do it anymore.
Yeah, I've heard of other people that's happened to them.
Yeah. So it was very quick, very quick. She actually died of sepsis brought on by the cancer. She didn't actually die of the cancer, but it was so aggressive that she'd had a scan. I think it was about 2 weeks before she died, and we got the scan results in, and it was localised still to sort of like the pancreatic area, so in her stomach. And because she died within sort of 15 minutes, sort of 20 minutes of getting into A&E, she had to have another post-mortem because that's just the legal. If you end up and you die within A&E, if you die within the hour of turning up, you have to have a post-mortem.
Oh, right, yeah.
So she ended up, and when they did the post-mortem, they found it in her brain, her lungs, her bones. So in 2 weeks, it had progressed, like literally just gone.
Well, perhaps.
And prior to this, she had no obvious symptoms?
No.
Or
no. She, funny enough, she'd always had slight indigestion problems. She was someone who was a bit sort of, which makes me worry because, you know, when you start feeling like, is that a sign? I don't know.
But that's quite common. You mentioned is what I had last year.
Yeah.
And now you said, you know, your mum sadly passed away with that.
Mm.
And I took it, you know, as if it was nothing when I had it, but I didn't actually realise.
Yeah, it's quite very
how serious.
Dangerous. Yeah,
I didn't realise how serious I was last year, really, until one weekend. But anyway, I think probably that's what's obviously taken it all around the body, I suppose. Yeah. That's made it spread.
Yeah. So she came home from being in hospital on the Friday, and then on the Saturday, a district nurse came round to do her sort of meds and everything else, and I was really concerned because she had a rash on one of her legs, and she wasn't in any pain and she didn't seem to have a temperature, but in my training, we were told that any cancer patient that has a limb rash on one of their limbs, treat a sepsis because it's just antibiotics. It's not going to do any harm, but it might actually cure the sepsis before it takes hold. And the district nurse basically just said to me, you need to stop being a nurse and be a daughter. I think she's fine. Mm. And then on the Tuesday, unfortunately, she got a phone call from my dad who went, she's not talking any sense. I don't know what to do. And I said, just get an ambulance. And yeah, it was it. We got there at 9:15 and I think she was gone. She'd gone by about 25 to 10.
Wow.
Cranky.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you had your dad.
And then I had my dad. So
was that quite soon after? Or?
No. So that was in the end of April, beginning of May of 2017. And then I got diagnosed around about the Christmas time.
Oh, God.
So my dad was still very here. Very well, and everything's fine. But yeah, I got diagnosed around about that time. So,
and what cancer was that your dad had?
My dad had liver cancer.
Right. Yeah.
Brought on by lifestyle, to be fair. But he had liver cancer, and he was 5 weeks from diagnosis to death.
Wow. Crikey.
So crazy.
It's so quick.
Yeah, quick.
You say lifestyle, what do you mean by that?
So he was a bit of a drinker.
Right. Well, we all like a bit of a drink.
Yes, but there's a bit of a drink. Mm. And then he was diabetic, paid no attention, thought he knew better than most doctors, you know. And unfortunately, it took hold and that was it.
Yeah, I suppose we all get that way sometimes. But, you know, at the end of the day, I leave everything to my oncologist.
exactly. But my dad was diabetic since I was 17 and was still someone who drank and ate an awful lot of the wrong things.
Yeah.
And he liked to fry up. So basically they just said that it was a lifestyle cancer. But again, very aggressive, just took him. I've never seen anything quite so shocking as my dad.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't believe, you know, I sit and think about, obviously, how long I've got. And then I think you hear these stories, you know, it's just amazing.
So if that was 5 weeks, had he sort of, before diagnosis, had he lost weight?
No.
At all?
No.
Nothing?
No. He had had prostate cancer, but he'd had radiotherapy for that and was given the all clear.
Right.
So he was still working. My dad was still working. He drove himself to the hospital to be told that he had liver cancer. And 5 weeks later, he was trying to eat his dinner with a remote control, because the TV remote, because the toxins build up so fast in his body that brought on like the dementia symptoms. So I took some time off of work to sort of look after him, and he had no idea who I was. He didn't know who my daughter was, which is his grandchild. He was trying to sort of climb into bookcases. I mean, it was horrendous.
Mm.
And the decline was fast. I mean, it wasn't daily, it was hourly, and you could just see him. I mean, I've got photos on my phone that if I showed you what he looked like when we went to the hospital when he drove to the day before he died, it's not two different men.
Right.
Yeah.
Cracking.
And he couldn't stand up. He was then incontinent. And when I mean incontinent, I'm talking every 20 minutes incontinent, double incontinent.
Mm.
He was talking absolute gibbity-goop.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't eating. He refused to drink. He couldn't remember passwords. He couldn't remember names. He didn't know where he was. I mean, it was distraught.
But so tell us about your career. I don't know how long it was as a cancer nurse.
So it was only 2 years I did cancer nursing.
And where it was?
My cancer?
No, where the...
Oh, Darratt Valley. Still at Darratt Valley.
Oh, right.
So yeah. Pine Therapy is the chemotherapy support.
No, sorry, where you worked as a cancer nurse.
Yeah, Darratt Valley.
Oh, right, sorry.
Darratt Valley. So that was before I moved up here.
Yeah.
So, just really just one of them support workers that would come in and you would take their bloods and their blood pressures to make sure that they were well enough to have their chemo the following week.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a lot of time with a lot of patients that were being given the worst news possible, but also I spent a lot of time with patients that were given the best news possible. Found a lot of stuff out, a lot of private work. We did blood transfusions, you know, inserting PICC lines, flushing PICC lines, taking bloods from them, Hickman lines, Porter-Cathes, but also learning about what cancer does to an individual.
Yeah.
So I'd have two types of patients. Mm-hmm. I'd have the patients who were like really positive and were like, I'm going to kick it and I'm going to do this and it's not going to beat me. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have the other kind of patients who pretty much you could see just
given up
yeah. on the day of being told.
Yeah.
And it's so true that what I call PMA, positive mental attitude, absolutely works wonders. And it's free. It's your doing. And yet it absolutely changes your whole perspective.
Mm, I like that bit. It's free.
Yeah.
It is free.
Because we're always on about positive mental attitude.
Yeah.
But it is free.
Yeah, and it's to do with you. You have to just look at it in a way that this is not going to change my life. And actually, cancer treatment now is a livable treatment. It's not meant to be. If chemotherapy is putting you through a place where you can't get out of bed, where you're sick all the time, where you're really unwell, that your standard of living is so poor, then that's not really what chemotherapy is about. It's meant to be giving you a standard of living that you can then carry on living with this disease. So you can reduce it. I remember I had a really, going through my journey, I had a really horrible month where I was like, this is it. If I had a button, I'd press it now because I'm done. And it was my friend who had gone through something similar who went, why don't you get them to reduce your dose? So they reduced it by 25%. And I was like, oh, my God, the difference, just that 25% for me going, I'd press that button now if I had it, to, oh, let's just go and see the Foo Fighters, which I did 2 days after chemo.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, you know, it was just, it taught me a lot working on pine therapy. And people think it was a sad place, and it wasn't a sad place at all. There were sad stories. But actually, when you get to a point where that patient is taking its last breath, they've gone through hell before they've got there. So actually, when it gets to that point, you do think, actually, it's a blessing.
Yeah. I think knowing you, that the time I have is not, it's only been a few years now, but say you come across as a happy, jolly person, and if you're in your job and you're enjoying doing what you're doing, and also you're a happy person anyway, That must rub off on the person.
But I find that a lot in nurses in this country, they're always very, very positive.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And, but, I mean, when you had your breast cancer and you had that friend that said, oh, why not try reducing it by 25%? Not everybody's got that.
No.
And we have this with statins in heart disease. You know, I've got a horrendous reputation of statins.
Mm-hmm.
I know people who've taken statins and had side effects and immediately thrown them in the cupboard, so I'm not taking them anymore.
Yeah.
Mm. When you could actually say to the doctor, can I try another kind of statin?
Absolutely.
But you need somebody there to help you or tell you that this is available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And you need to listen to people who are on statins who don't have side effects.
Absolutely.
Because I don't, touch wood, have side effects from statins. And I take the biggest dose you can.
And it's not just one type of statin. No, like you said, there's a million statins.
Yeah, but people think statin is a statin.
Absolutely.
A bit like your lung cancer is a lung cancer when there's 18 different types of lung cancer.
Yeah.
You know? So, as having the benefit of others and people talking that brings this sort of thing to the front fore that helps people.
Absolutely. And I think it was a privilege for me to hit my breast cancer journey having the knowledge that I had from even working at Pine Therapy, even if it was for 2 years, because it was a lot of stuff mentally that I went through that I preached beforehand.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, no, Louise, you've got to take your own advice now, girl. You've got to pull your big girl pants up and we've got to, you know, I've said this so many times to everyone else, you've got to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, had I not had that experience, my journey would have been a very different journey because I would have been so scared, so petrified. I mean, they throw big words around at you and everything else. And I think, you know, to a person coming in with no knowledge about anything, my mum, my dad, you know, it would just eat them up. That's all they could think about. Where I was like, no, I 2 years every day spending with patients with cancer. Some of them were great, laughing, joking. We'd dance with them. I'd paint their toenails. you know, mm-hmm. I do nipple colour charts and, you know, all sorts of stuff for those.
Did you do all this for you, Mum?
Yeah, I can dance and I've got lovely nipples.
I was going to say, I'm more worried about your nipples.
You know, you could have star shapes and heart shapes and all sorts of stuff.
Been through that.
So, you know, just, you know, laughing about it. Yeah. We used to have a company that came in once a month and we'd have a group of women who'd lost their hair and we would try the wigs on and, you know, someone would be like, oh, I fancy being a redhead. I've never been a redhead.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, it was a fun place and it was very knowledgeable and I owe it a lot because I generally don't think, even if I was only there for just a short space of time, I don't think I would have survived it.
Yeah, but see, you sound as if you really enjoy your job and doing it. How do you leave that job at night? To go home, did you leave it and go and relax, or was you always thinking of it in your mind?
No, I was able to leave it because I knew that we were trying our hardest to make people better. Mm-hmm. It is an upward mountain, and obviously there are some people that it does work for, and there are some people that it doesn't work for, and there are some horrendous stories, and there are patients that get under your skin, and you still think about them now, and I can still cry about one patient. I won't mention her name because that's not fair, but... You know, she took it with grace and I, you know, she floored me to the point where my matron was like, you can go home. And but I think you don't get into nursing, you don't work in a hospital without knowing that you're going to have someone that's going to affect you. And you go home and you have a cry and all you can do to get through the night is know, did I do the best? Did I treat that person like I would have, like I'd want someone to treat my nan? And if you have, then you've done the best.
Mm.
And I always think my legacy is that while I was there for 2 years, I met people in their darkest hour and they won't know my name at all. I won't be they won't remember me. But at some point, let's just say that lady who was the one that floored me, at some point she's going to say to someone, she made my day, she made me smile today. Mm. And I just think I've changed her world. Even if it is just for that moment, I've made her smile in a really bleak period of time. And that to me, that's all I ever wanted.
Well, that's why we do this, don't we? Because we, you know, you're coming on here and you're telling us, you know, what you've been through, what you do, what your job, and all what you've been through in life. But you've come through the other end and you're, you know, you've got a positive mental attitude. You've got 10 times or more.
I saw more people with a negative attitude than a positive one in my, during my illness.
Yeah.
You know, I had to go to rehabilitation classes.
We'll have to try and get someone on who's got the similar thing to you. To see what they're sort of, you know.
Yeah. My godfather's just going through heart rehab.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. So it's, but I think heart scares people. I know heart scares me.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
Out of everything, if someone said to me, you've got something wrong with your heart, I think I'd be petrified.
Well, the trouble is when you've had a heart attack, obviously every little twinge and pain you get in your chest, you think it's related to your heart, and of course it's not. You know, you get aches and pains anyway.
Yeah.
But, you have to get over that.
I mean, there must be a worry that you go through every day. And, you know, like we all do with different illnesses, but your heart is your heart. And if that stops,
I think that's it. I think that's what scares me the most. If that just decides to just, I've had enough today.
Yeah.
Yes, petrifies me. Well, I'm very brave.
I take a different look at it. I think I'm lucky because I know I've got heart disease and I'm taking the drugs to help.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's a lot of people out there that's got it and don't know they've got it.
Exactly, yeah.
And they're the ones that are a risk, you know.
Yeah.
And, but I do, every morning I wake up, I think, oh, I've made it another day.
Yeah.
I do. You know, it's just a sort of...
I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
A strange, isn't it?
I know. I look out that window and I think, cool, how lovely this is, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I could have been... going to work.
Well, I used to think that, but...
But the biggest problem in this country is people don't talk about it, you see.
No.
You know, they hold it in. And this is a way to let people listen, and they still don't have to talk about it, but they can listen to other people.
But we've been friends for 34 years, and we've never spoke about this ever until we started doing this.
Yeah,
you know, we'd talk about football, and we'd talk about this and everything else. And
do you know? I think it's because people get scared. Like, I find that when I told my friends that girls have got breast cancer, I had a mixed bag of emotions. I had some who were like, oh, my God, right, let's see it, I'm going to be there, bang, bang, bang. And then I had others who were like, oh, and never spoke to me. They kind of just went, oh, because they didn't know what to say. And I remember sending some text messages around saying, I'm still Louise. Like, please, I'm still the girl that likes to swear. I'm still the girl that likes to eat a Dairy Milk and have red lipstick. And, you know, I'm still who you were always, who I always was. Mm. Please just talk to me like I still am. Just because I'm ill doesn't, it hasn't changed me. Like, come forward. I think people get frightened because they don't want to have that conversation. Yeah, and they either don't want you to suddenly burst into tears on them because they're like, oh, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And, you know, that's necessary. We don't want you to talk about it. When I was going through my case, the last thing I wanted to do when I was out having a meal or with my friends was talk about my illness.
Mm.
I wanted to talk about who was, you know, the gossip or who was going on in the celeb world or who'd watched EastEnders or if they'd bought a new top out, a new look. That's the stuff I wanted to talk about.
Other shops are available.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No. Well, it's what we always say.
But, you know, like, I didn't want to talk about it, and I feel that they, people get scared because they think that that's all you want to talk about.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to approach that or even
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a relates to your persona as well. You know, if you're a positive person, that's a lot easier to talk to somebody who's positive than it is to somebody who's negative, you know, because you're out for a meal or something and the last thing you want to do is destroy the atmosphere.
I'd never really thought of it like that way, that you know, people don't come and see me because of that.
No.
I thought they just didn't like me.
This must be the most people we've had in your kitchen.
Yeah. Well, when Lenny gets here, it'll be like a crowd.
Yeah. Go on then, next question.
Next question. So it was after, you know, sadly losing your mum and dad that you started up your dementia group?
Yes, so my dementia group came about from working.
Tell us all about it and where it is and what times people can go to it.
So it's the last Tuesday of every month and it is in Hopton. In Suffolk,
not Hopton in
Norfolk. And it's in the Methodist church there. It's not related to the church. It's just the only place that gave me a hall for free. And and we do quizzes and there's sandwiches and crisps and hot drinks and like-minded people. And we're all there and we all just have a chat and a quiz. You can come with the care. You can come as a carer or you can come and bring the person with dementia as well. So that's fine. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple of therapy dogs. We have a laugh. We have a social prescriber that comes around and she can talk about all other bits and pieces about what you can get from the social services, what's helpful, age concern, loads of stuff like that. So it's just a really nice little place. We have good fun. We have a little trophy that we can give out for free.
Oh, fantastic.
So, yeah, and I've started that because I just think there needs to be more out there for people.
Yeah. Do you get many people?
Yes, we've had up to 17.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we have regulars.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we did a little Valentine's Day quiz. We've just done an Easter quiz. And I'm hoping to get some funding so I can take them all to the beach for some fish and chips. And
do you have people come in and talk to you?
We did want to, but I found with a lot of the patients who are coming in with their partners that their partners don't know they've got dementia. So they're coming in as just for like a social event. So we didn't really want to sort of have someone standing there going on and on and on about it and it sort of scare people off.
Yeah.
So it is just like a little social group.
I was going to volunteer our services.
You can come down and have a look. It's not a problem.
Yeah. So then we go move on to your journey of your breast cancer and how you first found out about it and where, you know.
I was at a Keep Fit class.
Right.
Which is why I never do Keep Fit.
Yeah.
And I bled through my nipple. And I did the Keep Fit class, came home, got in the shower, and was very much like...
So it wasn't through a routine check?
Nope. No, I had no lump. I had nothing. I just bled through my nipple, and I was like, well, that's clearly not a good exercise class to go to. Look what happened. And then I did a shift at work, and it happened again.
Yeah, that's those two ladies in America that I spoke about. They didn't have any signs, did they?
No.
Yeah. No, it was
that's what we, you know, wanted to, you know, show to people. You know, it doesn't mean to say check in.
No, 38 I was.
Really?
Yeah, young. No cancer in my family, apart like breast cancer. Nothing at all that would make me think it was even that. And then I just had a mass in my milk ducts.
Right. So you've obviously gone to the doctors?
Yep, gone to the doctors. Well, I worked, so I went through. Yeah. They look after their own. So very quick diagnosis. And chemotherapy started in the February of 2018.
Oh, right. So, and how many of them did you have?
I had 6, 4 months off, and then another 6.
Yeah.
And I lost all my hair.
Did you have immunotherapy as well? Or did you have immunotherapy as well?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't know what I had. Should I tell you why? Because I was very much someone who went, I don't want to know.
Right. Yeah.
Because.
Just do it.
I don't want to know. I don't want to read my notes. I don't want to know. You need to tell me where I'm going to sit, what time I'm going to be here, how long I'm going to be here,
yeah,
how crap I'm going to feel tomorrow. And then that's all I need to know. I don't want to know. And I think the reason I was like that was because I'd seen my mum pretty much just give up on the day that she was told. And also I'd seen patients, like I said, the two types of patients. There was one patient who was like, I don't want to know anything. Just, it's not going to interfere with my life. I'm just going to turn up here once a fortnight, be pumped for this, and then I'm going to go on my merry way.
Yeah.
And then there were other patients who wanted to know the ins and outs of absolutely everything. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But the patients I saw, they weren't happy. And they were so bogged down with the nitty-gritty details that it took over their life.
Mm.
And I made the decision that being 38 and a mother of three, that was not going to happen. I didn't want to be ruled by that. I wanted to rule it myself. So I literally just said, okay, tell me if it's working. That's all I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
You're the doctor.
Yeah.
You know what you're going to pump in me. I don't need to know anything. So I literally just sat down and said to them, is it working? They go, yes. And I'd go, that's all I need to know. I'll go now, bye. In any of my consultations, and in fact, they were absolutely, they used to hate me because they'd be like, but Louise. And I'd be like, no, I don't need to know. I feel okay. I'm all right. And my consultant, he was lovely. He actually turned around and he was just like, you're the only woman I know who turns up here with great big gold hoop earrings on, bright red lipstick, a scarf around their head, and you don't want to know anything. And I was like, no, I don't want to know a thing. Just want to know.
Just get on with it.
Just get on with it. Don't talk to me. Don't laugh. Make me laugh. Play some music. Get me a coronation chicken sandwich from the calf and I'm good to go. There are some weird stories. Like, let's not talk about the morphine itch. The morphine itch. You know, there's the drugs you have to take. The, you know, whipping my wig off in the middle of Primark because I was really, really, really hot.
Yeah.
And absolutely scaring the poor kid behind me. I think I gave him nightmares. There's loads of stories like that. And I just, you know, it's a journey. It's an absolute journey. And I'm... Yeah, it was hard. It's not easy. It's hard.
Mm.
But
on a final note,
go on.
One thing we always asked our cancer guests is the cancer bell.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ring it? And what do you think of it?
Honestly,
yes, please.
I never rung it.
Right.
I don't really agree.
Did they actually offer it to you?
It was there. Yeah. On the day that I left, there was a lady who was taken really poorly and was having a really horrible reaction to her chemotherapy. So most of the nurses were dealing with her. She wasn't well at all. But I don't agree with it.
Right.
And I'll tell you the reason why. I think it's lovely and you should celebrate when you've got to the end of your journey and you should be told that you're cancer-free. And I think that...
Kid-free? You let that in the bag, didn't you?
And I generally do think that for kids, it'd be nice to do something because kids' cancer is just horrific. I mean, horrendous. But as an adult, the bell is there to signify that you've done well, but it's rung in front of people that are still going through their cancer journey. Yeah. And, you know, they may not have the same outcome. And I think it's not really fair.
Mm.
That's my opinion.
No,
Some people love the idea of ringing the bell to say that they've completed it.
Yeah.
And I'm all for that because everyone's is to everybody's taste. To me, I just don't like it. So I chose not to.
Yeah,
In all honesty, I just wanted to run out of the hospital to say I'm never going back there again and I need to hug my three kids and enjoy my life.
Yeah, well, there's not one in Bury.
No.
So I only knew through when we had
the interview with the oncologist.
Dr. Patterson. Mm. Yeah.
Is that for the same reason?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree in a way. Oh, I don't know. I've never thought of it because...
Well, with your cancer, you're
I'm not cured, yeah.
You're never going to get to ring it, are you?
No.
Simple as that.
No.
So you're going to be looking at it from the other direction.
Mm. It gives a bit of false hope. I mean, at the end of the day, you're ringing it. You know, there's a high percentage of patients whose cancer comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's not the end of it. That's what I'd be worried of.
Thinking, oh, yeah, I'm free. And then suddenly,
you're not.
6 months, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that is the only doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
That's like when I even tell people now, oh, my, it's really cleared. Then I think, no, you've got a positive mental attitude, you know, and it's free.
Absolutely. It's free.
Yeah.
And everyone can have it.
Yeah, and I'm going to think... You know, that way all the time.
Absolutely. So, it's the best way to be.
Yeah.
I think that's probably for people who haven't got a positive mental attitude, the bell, you know, because they need something, you know, to cheer them on the next stage, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like when you're in an egg and spoon race, people cheer you on and you go faster. And when you, you know, people who haven't got a negative attitude or have got more of a negative attitude, that might be a sort of a sign to say yes.
Yeah, like a goal to get to.
To get to.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So it has a lot of meanings to it, really.
It does. Ooh. But could they not clap?
Yeah.
Like, why does it have to be a bell?
I think the NHS are fed up with clapping.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know, maybe get them. I don't know. I can't think of anything.
I think everybody should deal with it in their own way. But if there is a cancer bell, it should be a long way from the cancer ward, perhaps.
Absolutely. Put it somewhere else where it's not being heard by people who are taking their last breath.
Local pub.
Well, yeah, all that, you know. Free
round. At least the people who are still suffering wouldn't have to see it.
Exactly. In the bar, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put it in the bar. Everybody thinks it's last orders. That's the trouble.
I just, I don't agree with where maybe the placing of where they put it. Maybe that's
the thing, yeah.
Because it's, but
I'm sure it does some good.
And you see kids and they're really, really excited about doing it, and that's lovely to see. I just don't agree with it for every ward. And like you said, placement is probably key.
Well, on that note, thank you for all your comments this afternoon, and they've been completely your comments, and we we've really enjoyed having you this afternoon.
It's been absolutely brilliant. Yeah,
thank
absolutely
you.
Brilliant. Thank
you
very much.
I wish you two the most amazing success.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And stay tuned because we've got some exciting guests coming in over the next few weeks. But Patrick will tell you who we got next week coming in. Who we got, Patrick?
Well, hopefully, if everything goes according to plan, we've got... who have we got?
Snooker player, Cliff Thorburn.
That's it.
The first person to make a 147 break live on TV.
Yes, for the grinder.
Yeah, the grinder, they call him.
Brilliant. Okay, lovely.
Thanks very much, Louise.
Thank you, Louise.
And I'll see you next week, Pat.
Yep, take care, everybody.
Yeah, bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.